This interview with Dr. Sean Cole of Durham University is part of the Jodcast. For the full show, please go to jodcast.net.
Your research is largely on, and has been largely on, galactic structure. Is that true?
On galaxy formation and on the very large-scale distribution that galaxies trace out. It's a very large-scale structure.
Okay, so you're talking about the structure of large numbers of galaxies overall.
Yes, the sort of filaments and clusters that they trace out on very large scales.
So when you talk about filaments of galaxies, you're talking about what do we actually see in the universe?
So if you make a map of the galaxies on very large scales, you find it's rather like a three-dimensional cobweb, and that there are long strands connecting large clumps of galaxies, but then along these strands are like a string of pearls, a set of galaxies. And that, so that string of pearls is the filament. They seem to trace out a complicated and quite beautiful structure in the large-scale galaxy distribution.
So when we look out into the universe and we see galaxies, we know that there are hundreds of thousands of galaxies, millions of galaxies out there. They're not distributed evenly throughout the universe. There's not, you know, they're not stuck out there in a nice sort of regular way. It's not a uniform distribution, but you say that they're clumped and strung out along lines of galaxies.
So they're not a uniform, and they're not even a random distribution. There's the sort of order to their clustering, and extracting information from that pattern is a lot of what we do. So in Durham we run computer simulations that start off with what we think are the initial ingredients of the universe. And depending on what assumptions you make there, you produce different patterns today. For instance, there was speculation that there was a particular fundamental particle, a neutrino. And in that case, you find that the pattern is very different. There's not a lot of structure on the smaller scales. The very larger scales look similar, but then on smaller scales, the pattern's distinctly different to the more standard case.
So you have to put a lot of information into these simulations before you get going. One of these things is such as things like, does the neutrino exist? And presumably how heavy it is, because I guess all these ingredients that the big player in the simulations is what gravity does on large scales. What other bits and pieces do you put into a simulation to try and, I mean, to simulate a universe sounds like an awfully big job. How do you even start?
Yes, although a lot of our simulations actually have very few ingredients. What one needs are the particles that carry most of the mass in the universe. And those are actually believed not to be the particles that you and I are made of, but some more exotic particle which has been dubbed cold dark matter. And the only important force that acts between them is gravity. And so all you need is the initial distribution of these dark matter particles, and then to compute the gravitational force. But these days, and the largest simulations we've done are with 10 billion particles, that's one with 10 zeros after it. What the simulation does is, on each one of those particles, is calculate the force on it due to the gravitational traction of the other 10 billion minus one particles. And in principle, it's a very simple calculation, but in order to do it very quickly, it's very hard, because you've got a lot of forces to calculate, and you've got to do this repeatedly at close time steps so that you can follow the individual orbits of the particles. But very clever methods have been used so that supercomputers can be exploited to the best potential and follow these simulations all the way to the present.
I mean, as you say, it sounds easy, right? I mean, you've got a billion particles, which, you know, sounds like a lot, but for a computer, no big deal. It's a billion numbers. But you're saying that in order to figure out how each one of those little particles moves, you have to do essentially a billion times a billion calculations. And you have to do that for every instant of time.
Precisely. And that would actually take, even a computer where it can do these things in microseconds, it would still take many thousands of years if that's the method you used. So you have to use clever algorithms that enable you to do fewer calculations and yet still get the end result to the required accuracy.
And the other thing, too, is that even though we're talking about a billion particles, which it's a big number, but that can't possibly be exactly the number of particles that there are in the universe.
No, that's true. So each one of our particles is actually representing, in a very crude way, a large set of real particles. And often, in some of the simulations we do, a single particle will weigh more than the whole galaxy. So We're not even resolving the many hundreds of millions of stars in our galaxy. We're just treating them as one mass particle and what their average position and average mass is, and that's all.
I suppose the idea is that we want to see what the result is of having this mysterious cold dark matter behaving in the universe with a little sprinkling of the matter which, for instance, you and I and stars and planets are made of, and just see what happens, right? You've got this cold dark matter which we can't see. It doesn't radiate by itself, but it only interacts gravitationally. How does that form? How does that create the universe that we see?
Yes, the dark matter really just defines the framework in which the sort of more interesting physics occurs. And that's the other side of the work that I'm involved with in Durham. The dark matter is the dominant mass component of the universe. It's where most of the mass is. And so it creates most of the gravity. But then into those gravitational clumps, those gravitational potential wells, that's where the normal matter is pulled. So a galaxy is formed by first forming a large clump of dark matter and then the normal material falling in with the dark matter. And then there are lots of more interesting physics that can occur. The gas streams can collide with each other, which will cause them to crash together and heat up. They can then get to such high temperatures that they can emit X-rays, and that helps them cool down by getting rid of that radiation. And eventually they can form very dense clouds of gas capable of similar conditions that we see in our own Milky Way, where stars actively form. So this is how we think that the processes begin. The gas is pulled in by the dark matter, can cool, and then can start forming stars in dense clouds.
Which we can see, I mean, essentially the stars and the galaxies, which the stars comprise, trace out the structure of this underlying is not really the word, is it? It's the dark matter distribution, which we cannot directly see, but we can see the result of it.
That's right. It's rather like the fairy lights on the Christmas tree that's in your office, that you can't see the underlying tree, at least not in the dark, but once you turn the lights on, they trace out the structure, and you can instantly recognise it as a Christmas tree. But in this case, the galaxies are lighting up the structure, and we're assuming that it's tracing the underlying dark matter, but all we see are the lights.
Hmm. So when you put in the ingredients into your simulation and push go, and then, I guess, have a cup of coffee for a week or two while it runs the numbers. In fact, how long does it take to run a typical simulation?
I mean, the largest simulations where I've pressed the go button have taken a few days to run on a large supercomputer, but the biggest simulations that I've analysed have actually taken of order a month on a supercomputer. And you never get a month in one go. You get a few hours here and a few hours there. So in real time, it takes a year or more to run.
Yeah. So at the end of all this computation, at the end of it, you have a useful a product. You have a simulation of the universe with galaxies strung out in these interesting filamentary shapes. Yeah, I presume you've got big voids between these structures. But the most interesting thing is, of course, you can measure what the dark matter has done. You can see it because you put it into the simulation and you know what a dark matter particle is.
Yes, that's where the theorists, the people who run these simulations, have the advantage over the observers who look at the real universe, is that in the simulation we know where the dark matter is as well as where the galaxies are, whereas in the real universe we can only directly see the galaxies. And it's basically trying to find out what information we can learn from the dark matter by looking at the galaxies in the simulation and translating that to what we can infer about the real universe is much of what we do. So sort of bootstrapping from the information you can learn from the simulation and then applying it to the real universe.
Mm. So how do they do? How do the simulations compare to the real universe?
In many respects, very well. I mean, the structures that we see in the simulations, this cosmic web, is very much what we see in surveys like the 2DF Galaxy Redshift Survey and the Sloan Digital Sky Survey.
These are actual real observational surveys which look at millions of galaxies, real galaxies, and see how they're positioned in space.
So, and the 2DF survey, which looked at a quarter of a million galaxies, is actually what I spent quite a lot of my life working on for the last 10 years. But that's now finished, and we're moving on to the next generation of surveys to see how they will compare with what we can learn from the simulations.
Mm. Should point out that with these simulations, you're not exactly trying to reproduce what you see. You're just looking at the nature of how the universe would be structured given your input constraints. You're not trying to say, we actually do see a filamentary structure of galaxies in the real universe, and let's try and model that exactly.
Yes, it's only a statistical comparison, which is often hard to explain. We're not trying to produce the Milky Way galaxy, our galaxy in this particular location, and Andromeda galaxy next door as it is, but rather a universe in which galaxies like the Milky Way occur with the same abundance as in the real universe. Mm-hmm. So just statistical properties, and that the filamentary structure looks statistically the same, you know, rather like we could be in just some different random part in the universe, and the structure wouldn't look exactly the same as here, but many of its statistical properties would be the same.
Presumably you run the simulations a few times. I know it takes a long time to run one, but you want to run the simulation and hope that maybe, you know, it's a typical simulation. You haven't been fooled in one particular case, and you've got a simulation that just happens to look very much like what we observe. Presumably you do it several times just to make sure you weren't lucky or unlucky as you want to see it.
Yes, the short answer to that is yes, but it depends what sort of simulation we're doing. When we do these simulations of a whole universe, we're actually doing, we don't do the whole universe, but we do a very large box, which might be many millions of light years or billions of light years across. And it's believed that the universe is smooth and uniform on those very large scales. And therefore, we don't actually have to do separate boxes. We've actually got a fair sample of the universe in even small fragments. We can chop the box into 10 and look at the properties in each section of the box, and they're similar. On the other hand, we also do very high resolution simulations, very detailed simulations of formation of individual galaxies. And there it's important that you do many of those, because they will have different formation histories. Sometimes the Andromeda and Milky Way will have already merged. Sometimes they won't merge until the future. And if you just do one, it clearly won't be typical of what happens in the universe.
So these simulations you mentioned about the formation of galaxies, what have they told us about the formation of galaxies? How do galaxies form?
They've shown us a pretty convincing case that dark matter plays a very important role in galaxy formation, in sort of setting out the general scheme by which the galaxy begins to form by fragments forming at high redshift, which later merge.
These are fragments of dark matter.
Fragments of dark matter, but also probably containing small proto-galaxies, which you know, the first generations of stars have already started producing heavy elements and metals when the stars in those galaxies have gone supernovae. So these proto-galaxies later merge, and more gas cools onto the remnant that's formed by that merger. And this is how we think galaxies form. But we've also learnt that the energetic processes that occur within galaxies are also important. So it's not just the large-scale framework that determines what will form at the centre, but the processes going on in the very centre also affect the gross properties of the galaxy. So one example of this is that massive stars only live a very short time. They burn up their nuclear fuel very rapidly and then die in spectacular supernova explosions. Those explosions pump a lot of energy back into the gas of the galaxy, can reheat it, and actually truncate future star formation by making the gas too hot to form future generations of stars.
So the actual formation of stars in a galaxy can act to prevent the formation of further stars.
Yes, and for that reason we call it a feedback process, because it feedbacks on the original process and inhibits it happening further. In recent years, it's been realised that a process that happens on even smaller scales can also be important. So most, perhaps even all galaxies, host a black hole at their centre. There's a black hole at the centre of our own galaxy. In many galaxies, these, like our own, these black holes are doing very little. But if you start throwing matter into a black hole, not only does it eat up that matter, but as it falls in, it starts moving very rapidly, and that causes it to emit a lot of energy. And so you actually can get a lot of energy out of the surroundings of a black hole. And it's actually much more efficient than nuclear fusion in terms of generating energy. And a black hole being fed by small amounts of material can pump out enough energy into the galaxy to reheat a lot of the gas in the galaxy.
Hmm.
We have observational evidence that this seems to be happening on very large scales in clusters of galaxies. But we don't understand the details of the physical mechanism of how the energy gets from the close environment of the black hole to the very large-scale environment of the whole galaxy. One might think that the energy sort of punches its way out and bypasses the gas, rather like firing a bullet at a some sort of fluffy object like a cloud, that the bullet goes straight through and doesn't do very much to the cloud at all. But there would be enough energy in that bullet to completely evaporate the cloud if somehow you could capture it.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't understand the mechanisms by which that's happening at the moment.
So this is a feedback mechanism whereby matter going onto the central black hole is being stripped apart, heated, and expelled outwards into the galaxy, again disrupting the star formation processes in their galaxy.
Yes, that's what we think is happening, and we've been able to explain some of the properties of galaxies and the relationship between the galaxies and the black holes that they host by building such a model. But the details of quite how they do it is still not understood.
So even though the basic simulation of the universe that you're describing is relatively simple, you say it doesn't involve an awful lot of input parameters or things that could affect the outcome. Now we're starting to talk about some fairly interesting physics going on with these feedback mechanisms. So is that hard to include into these simulations?
Yes, and that's really where a lot of the uncertainty comes from, and that we can't predict the detailed properties of the galaxies. So galaxy formation is a very interesting problem for a physicist, because we actually know the initial conditions very accurately. What actually limits our ability to predict what the galaxy should look like today is actually the complexity of the physics. So we know the fundamental physical equations, and it doesn't require new physics of, you know, fourth force or new particles beyond the dark matter particles I've talked about already. But nevertheless, we can't solve those physics equations accurately enough. And it's rather like modelling the weather. Meteorologists understand most of the processes that involved in the heating and cooling of the atmosphere and transport of energy. But can they tell you when it's going to rain on Wednesday? No.
No.
Because it's too complicated. And
I see. Do you think that you predict that in the future we will be able to solve these equations more accurately? Is it a computational limitation, or is it a limitation in our ability to solve the mathematics itself?
So I think if you'd asked me this 4 or 5 years ago, I would have been more confident of saying that we would be able to solve these things accurately. But now that the black holes have come into the picture, it does make things an awful lot more complex, because the physics of the black hole is happening on a scale of a parsec, which is 3 light years, which might sound very big, but that's many thousands of times smaller than the size of the galaxy. Mm. And where we might have been able to understand the average properties of galaxies on the sort of kiloparsec, thousands of parsec scale, now that we've got to understand the physics that's happening on a much smaller scale, it seems that it could be much more complicated than I thought a few years ago.
It's an amazing job that you're trying to do. I mean, this is the problem of scale. You're trying to model clusters of galaxies, clusters of galaxies, filaments of galaxies, essentially a large, chunk of universe. Yet you're saying that some of the feedback processes are occurring on the scale of, a tiny, tiny little spot inside these big simulations. So how do you get around that problem? You're able to put in some information into the simulations about these feedback processes from these very, very small scales, but you can't model it down to that level because we don't have enough computational power to do it. How do you get that information into the simulation?
So I agree. So we have to use very simplified models, essentially, where we try and capture some of the things that we know must be true about this physical model. In particular, you can look at how much energy is going to be output into the medium and consider simple models of energy conservation. And you can do that without knowing in detail how that energy is transported. But you nevertheless have to make quite crude assumptions. And the interesting thing is, if you make those crude assumptions, then you can make predictions about what the galaxy should look like in your model, and then go and compare them to galaxies in the real universe. And hopefully you'll learn whether your model is accurate enough, or whether other processes need to be taken into account. And in that way, we hope to learn what are the important processes.
Mm. Just before we started talking about these feedback mechanisms, you mentioned that when you look at the simulations on how galaxies form, you see that smaller clumps of dark matter encompassing real matter, if you like, sort of the proto-galaxy material, merged together to form bigger clumps. Does that continue as the process?
Yes, we think that the basic way in which structure is forming in the universe is this hierarchical bottom-up scenario, so that you start off with little things, they merge together to form larger objects, they merge again to form yet larger objects. And today, the largest objects in the universe are so-called clusters of galaxies, which contain many thousands of galaxies, which one of the nearest rich clusters is the Coma cluster. But in the future, those could merge to form yet larger objects.
Hmm.
And 10 years ago, we would have said that that process will carry on forever with getting larger and larger objects. And when the universe is 100 times older than today, the typical massive objects would be 10 or 100 times larger than today. But now the current paradigm is that the universe also contains dark energy, not only just dark matter, but dark energy. And this dark energy is responsible for the expansion of the universe accelerating at the present time. And that means that all these clusters of galaxies are moving further and further away from each other, which means that their gravitational attraction is being reduced because they're moving further apart, and there will be less and less merging in the future.
Hmm.
So almost the largest structures have almost formed, and what's going to happen in the future is that they just move further apart.
Right. It's interesting that we currently live in an era where, as you say, the larger structures have formed, and even though gravity normally acts to clump together and produce these bigger and bigger structures, this mysterious dark energy is pushing the universe out faster and faster, and so it's counteracting this general...
It's a real puzzle. I think if you'd asked cosmologists 10 or 20 years ago what they thought the components of the universe were, that nobody would have said that they thought there was going to be dark energy in any significant amount. And yet the observations of the accelerating universe are showing that that the present day it is the dominant energy contribution in the universe. And that's very strange, because you very quickly go from the transition between dark energy being a negligible component in the universe to being totally dominant. Whereas we seem to be observing in the present day that it's dominant, but not totally dominant. The matter and things we're made from are still a significant percentage of the energy density in the universe. But so we're somehow living at this special epoch where we're going through this transition from being dominated by dark matter to being dominated by dark energy.
Mm.
And I don't think anyone expected that, and we have no underlying physical explanation of why we live in this special era.
Can your simulations tell us anything about dark energy?
Very little. Because we're going through this transition, in the past the dark energy was not important. So all the structure formation is pretty much the same whether the dark energy was there in the past or not, because it was there at such a low level. So it has very little bearing on galaxy formation. It does have an effect on the growth of the very large-scale structures today, and we and others are working on looking at very large galaxy surveys and comparing them to the microwave background radiation, that's the thermal radiation left over from the Big Bang itself. And there's an interesting effect whereby if radiation from this microwave background is travelling through a structure that's made of dark matter and dark energy, then how that structure is evolving can affect the temperature of the background radiation that you see. And the dark energy can cause the expansion to be rapid and result in a cold spot on the microwave background.
Mm.
And so people are trying to look at galaxy surveys and see whether cold spots line up with the large structures that we see traced out in the galaxies.
Right. So presumably the hot spots in the cosmic microwave background would be regions where the universe was, you know, more energetic, more energy involved, and the galaxies less likely to form. Is that the idea?
There are hot spots and cold spots in the microwave background, which are intrinsic to the position where the microwave background photons originate from. So they correspond to overdensities and underdensities that will eventually form the structures we see today. But then there's a second effect, which is like a foreground effect, that we're looking at this distant microwave background, but we're looking through it a screen of galaxies and the mass distribution that those galaxies are tracing out. And it's this evolution of the local galaxy density, local mass density, through the propagation of the light through that region, can actually change a hot spot into a cold spot, or a cold spot into a hot spot. And it's very hard to measure directly, because you're looking for a small effect and you're looking at a source which isn't uniform in the first place. So the only way of measuring this signal is in a statistical way of correlating the foreground structure with the background.
What's the next step with the simulations? Is it more computers? Is it running for longer? What needs to be done?
The next step in trying to understand galaxy formation is actually putting more physical processes into the simulations. We've talked about how gas cools and how star formation starts and how the energy from the star formation affects the cooling. Often this is done by simple analytic calculations that astronomers, physicists in general, treat things as being spherically symmetric and simplify the equations down to something that they can do on the back of an envelope. But really, the geometry is much more complicated, and now we would like to solve the equations relating to how photons propagate in the universe, radiative transfer, and how shock waves propagate through the gas directly on the computer. So to follow not only the gravitational processes, but the processes involving the gas and the star formation and how they're coupled together.
We already have these sort of processes inserted into the simulations, but in a reasonably crude way.
Yes, and the idea is to improve this and allow calculations to be done of higher resolution that can resolve these sort of processes on quite small scales, and perhaps understand how galactic winds are driven, how the gas is driven out of galaxies, and how very high energy photons, very high energy light that's emitted by stars and by black holes, comes to ionize the universe early on.
Well, we look forward to the results, so thank you very, very much indeed for taking the time to talk to us today.
Thank you.